welcome to Sci-Fi Color, the podcast featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
And today we're talking about Comedy Central's mini web series, White Flight. And we also have a special guest, my current roommate, Andy Doig. Or should I call you Andrew? I don't know which one to call you.
I think Andy's fine.
Okay.
My credentials for speaking on the show are as a video producer, radio producer, and I was an English major in school. And like the titular character, or the protagonist anyway, I am an average white male.
Yep, except your girlfriend hasn't been transported to Canada.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. Yeah, so just to introduce ourselves again, we did this back, me and Melissa did this back in episode one. Why are we talking about, what makes us qualified to talk about film or TV or whatever? So, I'm Maggie, I majored in cinema and English, and I no longer do either of those things, technically. But I still like talking about film and, analyzing it and looking at the aesthetics or whatever. And Melissa, you?
I'm unqualified.
You're not unqualified.
No, I'm an amateur writer. I do a lot of writing, and I also consume a lot, an embarrassing amount of media, TV, movies, etc. I'm well-versed in all cliches because I know them all.
Yeah. Except I'm the trope master.
Well, yeah, you know all the names for the tropes. That's weird.
That's true. Yeah, it was kind of weird. a little bit. So, let me think. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm, really, really sleep deprived. So, this might be a very interesting episode. White Flight. Yes. So, we're going to be talking about all six episodes. I guess we'll start...
So, if you haven't seen them, you should probably check them out. And they're really short.
Yeah.
So, there's literally no excuse. We're probably going to spend more time talking about them than actual content. So...
Yeah, so for people who have no idea what we're talking about, I have the little show log line in front of me. It's the year is 2042 and all of America's white people have been transported to Canada, except for a handful of emissaries left behind. Enter Gary, a struggling actor, wholly unprepared for his new responsibilities. Witness his awkward struggle as he liaises between his neighbors and the suspiciously positive Dan Corporation he now works for, whether he likes it or not. So that's the overall... Yeah. Well, went for the show.
I have to say, that's a fantastic concept.
It's
a really interesting premise.
Do you think it was executed well?
No, but I really like the premise.
What do you think? What do you think, Andy?
Well, I thought it was executed fine. I think it's an extraordinarily prescient concept. That Dan Corporation has a strong figurehead that they use to, communicate the whole idea of the company to everyone. And it seems like after the election, we have a very similar dynamic where we have a strong man and he's representing his company, and it's very similar. And I'm talking about Trump, by the way.
If that's said the word that Melissa did not want anyone to say.
The T word, yes. No, I actually had the same thought, even though this was created back in January, I believe.
Yeah, it was. I think it was released in January.
Okay, so it was
that's when it came out. Yeah, so
before then. Though he was running at that point, obviously.
Right.
But, yeah, it's kind of scary. It's more poignant than it was probably intended to be. But
yeah, it was a little bit kind of watching it now. It was ooh, okay.
It stung.
Yeah, it kind of stung. And, yeah, and also, big figure of a corporation, business... conglomerate thing. I mean,
right, and then, so it was a corporate state, which is kind of what we're looking at now. I mean, from my understanding, the divestiture isn't going to take place, or if it does take place, it'll be limited and within his own family. So, I mean, the parallels are between a corporate state and what America has lined up for the next government.
Sure, it wasn't one to one, but it was also not that much of a stretch to be oh yeah, this could totally happen. So before we kind of get into it, I kind of looked some stuff up on Wikipedia and online or whatever. So White Flight, that's the title of the show. And I just was we haven't done a little analyze the title thing in a while. So I kind of wanted to do that. So on Wikipedia,
well, White Flight rhymes.
It rhymes, which is always good for a title. Sorry, I'm flipping again. And so this is what Wikipedia says. White flight is a term that originated in the U.S. starting in the mid-20th century and applied to the large-scale migration of people of various European ancestries from racially mixed urban regions to more racially homogenous suburban or exurban regions. So basically white people, leaving cities or something?
Yeah.
Basically,
is what that is. Yeah.
Cities are, you know, I guess
scary places.
Subjectively worse in terms of schools, in terms of health,
quality
in terms
of life.
Of, I guess almost.
We're speaking in generalities.
Well,
here,
yes,
yeah.
I'm not singling out any specific city, and I'm not singling out any specific era of the movement, but it has definitely accelerated after World War II. And you could say it was definitely brought on. Actually, I was doing research on the GI Bill of 1944, not to get too nerdy. But
this is show, like, this is us.
But, you know, basically after soldiers came home, returned after World War II, the government was like, hey, we were just in a Great Depression. Let's give all the soldiers some good stuff so they don't, like, kill us and rebel. I should do drunk history. That would be hilarious. Anyway.
Yeah. We should do that at some point. We should do a special episode like that.
So basically the government said, hey, we will give you, a lot of opportunities to get housing at better rates. But these benefits were applied, unevenly. So it, benefited essentially the white soldiers, way more. Basically.
So why am I not surprised?
Actually, it's an extremely interesting point because it's one of the most important pieces of legislation that most people don't really know that much about.
GI Bill?
And you can actually point to it as some really a defining piece of some of the racial divide. Obviously, there's a lot of issues there, but that kind of accelerated some of the differences. And it kind of set off the way that we think of essentially the nuclear family. And that was advantageous for buying houses because people want to sell things and create capitalist society. Now I'm sad.
Oh, yeah. Also, Melissa's a humongous history buff, in case you couldn't figure that out by that whole spiel just now. For any of our new listeners who aren't familiar with that side of her. I feel like at some point we're going to start breaking into musical song. Let's not start it, but I feel like it might happen. So, some other notes
I was...
I'm
a baritone.
What?
Just for info.
You're a baritone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll You're also, like, super out of tune Thanks. All the time.
That's rude.
But it's true.
Well, yeah, no one says it's not true.
Saying it's rude. So, I'm very bad at harmonizing. I always switch to whatever is...
Because I always harmonize, and then, like... Sorry, I'm, like, clipped. I keep, like, leaning into the mic and, like, yelling into it. And I like, I'm actually, like, cognizant of it because Andy's sitting right next to me, and I'm sure he's, like, cringing on the inside.
Well, I don't have to edit it.
Well, yeah, you don't care. But, yeah, so, again, just some other, like, fun fact things I was looking up in relation to this episode. So, in the show, 2042 is when everyone gets transported to Canada. Or not everyone, all the white people. All the white Americans get transported to Canada. So, I was looking up, like, when it actually is the U.S., projected to become a minority-majority nation. And so according to the U.S. Census, that year will be 2044.
Maybe there's a disagreement in when they wrote and published the piece.
Sure.
This is when the latest statistics have
come. Yeah, or maybe it's like Dan Corp is just like, let's get them out of the way a couple of years before, like, the actual... Like, I don't know. Yeah, it was just, like, a fun thing to look up. And then I remember later on, in one of the later episodes, they kind of mentioned Vermont being, like, the whitest state, which I wanted to kind of, like, fact check. So then, I think this one was saying... Let's see. The whitest states. Let's see.
Wait. So is I lost proportionately or numerically?
Right. I had it, and then... I had to close all my tabs, and then I lost it. I know, it's so sad when I have to close all my tabs.
Yeah,
it looks like, so in terms of percentages, I've seen conflicting articles. This one I'm looking at now says Maine is the whitest state, by like 0.2% more than Vermont or something. But then I think I saw in another article that Vermont was the whitest state. So I think it's like a toss-up between Maine and Vermont.
It's so it's
like
essentially accurate.
Close. Yeah, it's like Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire. So like,
it seems not... to be within like any reasonable margin of error.
Yeah. Well. Like, yeah.
0.2%.
So all three of these states, Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, were at least 98% white in the 1990 census. And then, just for fun, the least white states, percentage-wise, are Hawaii, Mississippi, Louisiana, Maryland, and Georgia. So yeah, I don't know. Just kind of interesting to look at those stats.
What state did the show take place in?
California.
It was California?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was California, because the guy was an actor, right?
Right, so was it like L.A. or Orange County or something?
Yeah, or like somewhere probably near that area. Marine. And then, yeah, sorry, I like scrolled up when I shouldn't have. Whoops. I'll get back to what I was looking for. I just was kind of like looking up facts. I guess I have a personal story that I can talk about in a bit, but like we'll get to that later. So, okay.
Personal.
You
stuff.
Said, well, not it's not like super personal, but okay. Melissa, you said that you didn't like, you thought the execution could have been better.
Yes.
And then Andy, you said that you thought that the execution was like, fine.
Fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's debate it. What?
And then I'm trying to think, like, yes, I'll have my old roommate and my new roommate fight each other.
So what? Where do you
this,
stand?
This show is just gonna. I don't know. Like, I like the show. I think if I had to choose between the binary of like bad or good, I'd say good. I mean, I guess it could have been a little more cohesive, but I'm kind of curious to see, like, to hear what you didn't like about the show or the execution of it, of the concept.
Yeah, you first.
Oh, by the way, I'm the only person of color today. Well, I'm always the only person of color on the show, but, today I'm outnumbered by 2 white people, so fun fact for, talking about white flight. Anyway, so go, Melissa.
So I guess I was really disappointed by the show. It's not that I say that the show is that bad, but I just thought that the premise was hilarious and just awesome, basically. There's so many inherent comedic situations based on, you know, him being the only white person in the area. And, I mean, some of the jokes were funny enough, but it just kind of felt like people had a whole bunch of random jokes about being a minority and was just like, okay, this one goes to this episode, this one goes to this episode, and that is kind of the center moment of each kind of short piece. And yeah, I would definitely say it's lacking in cohesion. I do like how the Dan Corporation was kind of brought in throughout. I would say that the last 2 episodes were much stronger than the others, personally.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know. It wasn't laugh out loud funny, and it wasn't that clever. It was just like, oh, this is an amusing situation, I guess. And because it was so short, it was easy to finish. But if I wasn't going to be talking about it, I don't think I would have watched all of them.
That's fair. Yeah, I guess, like, none of the... I guess for me, like, I didn't find too many of the episodes, like, I guess poignant. Like, I think the one that, like, probably...
It thought it was smarter than it was.
Ooh. I mean, for me, I think the one that got me the most is probably, like, the acting one. Because that I could kind of
that was
see, and that
me,
was kind of
best.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? The acting.
There
episode?
Was that moment where he's auditioning and he's, be whiter. We need you to be more white. And Maggie and I were talking about this, and I think you described it as white being the normal. And so,
like white is
I had
the
never
default,
thought
at least like.
Like I never thought about what it meant to be like more white, right? Like what? How do you behave in order to fit that? And then thinking about other people being asked to perform based on another person's perception of what the averaged person of a certain race is. It's like kind of eye-opening and certainly like the most poignant.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like being like the majority in this country, like, yeah, like there's not really, I mean, I guess there are some stereotypes for like white people and things like that, but there aren't gonna be, there's not really that many.
They're not harmful stereotypes. Like, no one's going to be like, well, those white girls in their Ugg boots and Starbucks, they will never get a job.
True. So yeah, like, I don't know. And then like the whole idea of like white is considered normal or like the default or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I think even in my own like biases, I've mentioned this to other people and like they might not agree, but like if someone on the news, for instance, is talking about a person and like I don't see a picture or description or whatever, then I like automatically assume they're white until I see a picture or video, and then I'm like, oh, okay, they're not white, which is like a weird kind of internal thing, but like I guess growing up in this country, it's kind of how my brain works. I mean, I know not everyone experiences that, but like that was just something I noticed about myself. Mm-hmm. Like if I don't see a picture, I just automatically, and I don't like, there's no like indicators in the name of like what their ethnicity is, like I just kind of automatically assume they're white. So yeah, I don't know, like I think the show, I mean maybe in terms of like storytelling, until they get really into the Dancorp stuff later on, like it's not like super riveting, I guess, but like I still really like the show for like the issues that it talked about or kind of like got to, if that makes sense.
What about the cliffhanger ending? That felt kind of
With like the girlfriend being transported outside his house or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious. I don't know if I'm like that intrigued. But like, yeah, it'd be cool to find out what happens next. I mean, like,
I'm not either. That's the thing. It just felt open it up for a sequel. So here's,
yeah, let's hook them in with this kind of non-climactic cliffhanger. It was a little weak. One thing I was talking to you about, Andy, after we finished watching the show, was like how, you know, this is a mini series that's online, and I don't think this would have ever aired on TV. Or ever, maybe ever will air on TV, which is kind of interesting to think about, especially thinking about the times that we live in right now, aka end of 2016. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I think it may have been served better if they had just made a pilot instead.
Well, I think this was a pilot, essentially.
But it wasn't.
Oh. Okay,
it was disjointed. And if they had kind of set up a few major questions instead of, I don't know, trying to kind of accomplish answering the questions.
Okay. By
the end of the last episode, we sort of had answers to all of the questions that we had. At least the ones I cared about. You're like, mm-hmm. Yes, there's the girlfriend. But I don't.
But do we even care about the girlfriend?
No,
not really.
And honestly,
I mean, she's just some rando. Like,
I think it might have been better if we just hadn't had her at all.
Yeah, I don't think it's like, what purpose did she serve other than being his only reason for like being like, tell me about Canada, what's happening over there, or like, or whatever, give some background or something. You know, I guess he never like actually said that, but like,
to me, she felt, I guess, extraneous.
Yeah, I feel like her only purpose was, and like the parents, like, let's see where all the white people are and see what's going on there, like peripherally, yeah. Like not really strong, like there was no greater purpose for those characters.
There was a joke at her expense, but that was about it, which is when she was hooking up with all of the frat boys, you know, and that's kind of a weak joke to make in the first place, but like beyond that, like it's just her begging to come back home. It doesn't feel
which was
rounded.
Interesting. / weird.
I think like that frat boy image too. Like if there's a stereotype young American male, it's probably, I mean, not American. She's like, listen to my biases, right? the young.
I kind of assumed they were Canadian, honestly, but whichever.
Oh, you know those?
No, because they got transported to Canada. No, because they. Hey, you know, because like they were transported to Canada, right? So I mean, I don't know, but I guess it makes more sense that they would be like, I guess.
I figured that they were American.
Yeah.
I felt bad for all the Canadians.
Well, like, that's the thing, though. Why would they go to Canada? It's because, like, it's a very white country, right?
It's not. Is it that?
Now
white,
I
want to
look
though.
At. I don't think so, man. I'm pretty sure it's like as. I don't know if it's more diverse than the U.S., but I feel like it's around the same. Because there's definitely a big. I haven't seen that much Degrassi, but I've seen enough to know that, like, there are, like, people of color in Canada. Like Drake. So, like, I know they're up there.
Yeah, I know that there's a decent-sized immigrant population in Canada, though I'm not sure
there's
about
there's a huge, like, Desi population.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure about the rate of immigration and basically how their population is expanding as to whether they, too, will have whites become a minority. Not sure.
I guess maybe it was supposed to be some kind of comment on, like, the whole crossing of borders next to you thing, you know. Maybe it's kind of what it was meant to invoke, like, you know, Mexican people crossing over to U.S., Americans crossing over to Canada, which, like, was kind of sort of not really a thing that happened or was talked about a lot in the past couple weeks, but, like, whatever. Sorry, we keep going back to that topic, and I really shouldn't be like, but yeah. Anyway, so I don't, that's what I thought about it, right? Because, like, I mean,
yeah, it's that, a
I mean,
mirror.
It's like the counterpart to the whole, like, Mexican American border would be the border in the north, which would be the border between Canada and America.
And just like the mass migration of millions of people from Mexico into America in a very short time is a fiction, so is the massive migration of millions of white residents of the United States to Canada.
Go
fiction.
In. But yeah, I don't know. That's how I interpreted it. Like, I thought that's why they chose to do that.
See, that makes sense.
And also, like, where were they put them? Like, freaking Australia or something? Like, I don't know. Like, where else would they relocate them?
See, I think that is a good point as to why they chose Canada. And also, Canada is always just the butt of America's jokes.
Very true.
Because it's easy. And
yeah, they're right
and
there.
And it's like, it's basically PC because it's Canada, you know? But it's like making no jokes about New Jersey. Like, it's okay. It's completely allowed because New Jersey. I hate New Jersey.
You and your weird hate of New Jersey, yeah.
So it's okay because it's done frequently.
The reason I
they're
think
like a
it's
socially
okay
acceptable
is because
target.
It's done in jest and it's done.
Is it though?
Well,
I think the argument could be made that, you know, there's no frequency doesn't equal justification. Like, I'm not gonna make fun of, you know, people with disabilities and be like, well, they get called disabled or crippled all the time or something and make it right. I don't know if that argument stands here. Like, I don't think that the Canadian nation as a whole is, like, going to take offense at somebody being like, oh, maple syrup and hockey.
Well,
but, like, it's stereotypes and those are, you know.
Do we have Canadian listeners? I think we do. Sorry, guys.
Well, I guess that's my point in that it is kind of done in jest and there's no, I mean, excluding the War of 1812, there's really no historical precedent. It's not like anyone's going to be offended because it's, there's no,
yeah.
That a background oppression doesn't exist
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly.
All right, I
yeah,
totally
yeah, we totally
I follow
veered
that argument.
Way off topic. Let's veer back.
All right,
let's
sorry.
Veer back. No, it's okay. We always go off topic. But let's veer back onto
white flight
topic, I guess. So yeah, DanCorp. So, did that when you first saw it, like, I don't know, did your mind think, oh, there's, like, some kind of hidden,
well,
evil, sinister
obviously.
Background? I mean, like, obviously, but
I
like,
mean, that's what we're trained to expect.
True. Also, it's a corporation, so we all know those are evil. So.
I mean, that's a very interesting point, though. I mean, not to,
like,
get too in depth, but.
No, I think this is relevant to the show, as long as you don't go into, like, a whole
corporate,
like,
but I mean that corporation
spiel,
and the self-made man. That's an extremely interesting part. I found this the most interesting part of the show, by the way, because the idea of America, like, what's the ideal person. Well, the self-made man is the ideal American. We love the cowboy. You know, this rough, you know, this man who did not exist. Our idea of a cowboy did not exist. But it has nothing to do with reality. It's about what we think of as the perfect American. And it's hard to underestimate that, especially looking at the presidency, because even though Donald Trump, I said the T word again.
So at this point, we've all alluded to the president-elect, so having a good time.
Even though he was born...
A self-made man, not really.
No, he was born into wealth, but that's not the point. Sure. The point is that in the American consciousness, he built himself up, and that is what we prize. Other countries prize, you know, working together for the common good. We prize independence and, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and, you know, finding your way through the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
I just found that a really interesting part of the show.
I found this really interesting, too, because, like, I guess I wasn't... They kept repeating it, and I was like, I kind of know what that means, but not really. And I remember... Andy, like, when I first moved in, like, I think, like, the first week or two, like, a long, long time ago, like, you talked about the self-made man thing for you, like, for yourself personally, and, like, we don't have to get into it, but, like, I was just thinking, oh, that's so strange to me, because, like, I mean, I guess, in terms of, like, looking at my cultural background, like, what they and what my family values, like, not necessarily that same thing, the whole self-made man thing. It's kind of, I don't know. It's interesting because I had never thought about it that way, about how, like, this is such a big thing in American culture. And I mean, I know, like, the American dream is, like, you know, it's like every, like, other book you read in English class in, like, high school is about, like, the American dream or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean...
Do you want to go into it?
Yeah, sure. I'll get into it from my understanding. I mean... From a philosophical standpoint, a lot of this comes out of early Protestant theology, where you could prove to your other members of your community your predestination towards heaven by your ability to achieve material wealth on earth through hard work. So, like, the accumulation of signs of status was proof of your destination for heaven and, like, the ultimate sign of success. And that kind of developed over the years into... This strong drive for, I mean, everybody wants to be comfortable and have everything that they want, but, like, beyond that, there's a very ancient and very strong root of godliness in success, and one of the things that those communities developed was a lot of wealth, you know, inside of themselves. So when you came to look at people striving for identity and wealth today, like, we're all looking at it and being like, well, yes, I'm a good person, heaven likes me because I am successful and wealthy, and it's very important that it's individual because this is my proof that I'm going to be saved. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that's less overt, but that drive is still there. I'm a good man because I was able to succeed by myself.
Instead of, like, relying on family or...
Right.
Whatever.
Because those people have nothing to do with whether or not you're morally justified, right? Because those decisions are from within yourself. Or at least that's the conception. And then, like, what I think that's great about the DanCorp concept and people around whites saying, well, he never existed,
mm-hmm.
is because obviously any person cannot make themselves out of nothing. We all rely on our communities in order to support each other.
Right, you can't, like, rise up and be like, I did this all by myself. Like, doesn't actually make sense.
Right.
As a concept.
Like, what's the protagonist's name of the show?
I think it's Gary.
Gary.
Yeah.
and so Gary relied upon hundreds of years of institutionalized power in order to make his self-made man image. And then Dan...
Was Gary... I know he wore the self-made man shirt, but was Gary actually a self-made man?
Well, Dan wasn't either. I mean, the whole point is true. You know, they never existed.
Right.
You can wear the shirt and proclaim yourself to be a self-made man, but you're relying upon a long history in order to get where you are today. And but by denying that history, you're denying the power structure that gives you that strength. So if you're saying, oh, I'm a self-made man, and you're not relying on the institution, then you're not screwing over anybody else.
Yeah, how that ties into like the whole larger theme of washes like, your hands. Racial inequality and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's like the strongest thing about Dan, is that he points out the self-made American man trope as being a self, self-justifying rationalization of institutionalized racism and power.
Yeah. Again, for me, like, I guess this whole concept of the self-made man, like, I it's not that I didn't know that it existed or anything, it just, like, wasn't really that big on my radar, because, like, I guess, like, Chinese culture is much more about family and relying on family, like, I guess theoretically. I guess, like, me personally, I'm not, I maybe don't fit that as much, but, like, at least my personality-wise, but, like, it's all about, like, relying on family is, like, not fine, not only fine, but, like, expected. So, like, it's, like, it kind of goes against all these things, so I just find it very interesting. Because, like, yeah, success is still valued and whatever, and, like, you know, finances and stuff, but, like, you're supposed to take care of your family and respect them, and it's not supposed to be, like, I need to be different from my father or mother or whatever. Like, that's not... I mean, it's just, like, a whole other set of values. But, yeah, let's, I guess, dig into the actual show, I guess. So, or, I mean, because we've been talking about just like larger concepts, but okay, so I saw that the screen, the date was January, so this is episode one. The screen says January 20th, 2042. And then I think, let's see, Gary is wearing the Dan Corp shirt in the first episode, and also
he's
I noticed
good
like
shirts throughout the whole thing.
Wait, good shirts or
I mean
Dan
interesting
Corp shirts or both?
Shirts throughout the whole show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't write them down. I don't know if you did, but...
I didn't write them down. I think I only wrote a couple down, but yeah.
But everyone was on theme, you could say.
Yeah, there's very deliberate choices there. And I also noticed that in the actual intro for the show, it says... I think it says in the corner something like, sponsored by Dan Corp or something weird like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but something like that. I mean, you can jump, feel free to jump in whenever, like, I'm just kind of going roughly chronologically based on my notes. So, full disclosure, me and Andy haven't seen, we watched this, like, more than a week ago, so I don't know how much we're gonna retain in terms of, like, what happened when exactly, but, like,
but
we both remember.
It literally does not matter.
I remember, like, yeah, like,
I mean,
we remember the general concept of the show.
There are shows where it matters, this is not one of them.
Yeah.
I remember the shirts, absolutely. I don't remember exactly what they said, except I think there were a couple of Danco shirts and, like, you know, build yourself or something like that, which pays back to what we just talked about, for sure.
There was a self-made shirt.
Yeah, I remember that one. I do remember that one. It was, like, a bright yellow one, I think. Yeah.
And a lot of plaid. I'm just looking through, like, the screen caps on Comedy Central.
But that's real, though. Like,
so much plaid.
White guys do wear a lot of plaid.
Oh, my goodness.
They
do. There's plaid.
They really do.
That's default.
But even the other characters are also wearing plaid.
Oh, so that's not necessarily, like, a white choice. Maybe it's just a California thing, man. I don't know.
It's hard to know. They're a different species.
Most of our listeners are based in California, so
I love avocado.
That's true. You're obsessed with avocado.
I'm a real white
person. But you offended them and their delicate Californian sensibilities about plaid. But yeah, I'm just trying to look. I think I didn't. I don't think I took that many notes. But so we have, you know, like the show opens up. He just has like a nice, peaceful domestic life or whatever, or so it seems.
And
then all of a sudden, all the white people are teleported to Canada. And he goes back to try to find, like, what his girlfriend, who he was just talking to, and about to propose to or something, and she's gone, and he, like, kind of freaks out. So I kind of liked how, like, all of a sudden we switched to, like, some kind of, like, shaky documentary camera movements as, like, the horror of being the only white person in, like, a 25-mile radius starts to set in. Like, that was, I don't know, I thought that was kind
Isn't
of
Isn't it interesting that as the emissary, there were questions that he shouldn't have been, like, responsible for answering that he was asked. Like, daily right. task stuff that feels like anyone could answer that on their own. But right. he was still some sort of, like, it was necessary to reference the white guy. Like, I don't...
So did you understand that, or did you not understand that?
Well, I mean, to a degree, yes. I mean, obviously, he'd have to answer questions about, like, oh, where's my white neighbor? Or,
no, I mean, like, do you understand, like, the larger social thing that's pointing to, or did that completely go over your head?
Well, let me see if I got it or not, because it may have gone over my head.
Okay,
right?
So the way I read that, yeah. being a POC, was, like, being, like, for example, like, the only Chinese person in the room, people are just, like, randomly asking you questions about, like, being Chinese that they could just, like, look up on their phone or general stuff. So, like, that's the way I read it. It was, like, because I was trying to think this, too, because, like, obviously some of them were a little bit harder for me to pick up on, but I feel like, generally, what they were going for was, like, reversals of,
mm-hmm.
I guess, like, racial inequality stuff that we see. So that's the way I thought that's what that was referencing. Like, if, say, you're the only black person in the room, all of a sudden, like, people who are not black are asking you questions about being black that are, like, completely extra and unnecessary, for example. That's how I read that. I mean, I guess you didn't see that. Melissa?
Did you get that? Okay. But the thing I was wondering was, like, when he's walking down the street,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and people are asking him, like, you know, like, what am I going to do for groceries or whatever? And I'm like...
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
You know, like, it just seems, like, very interesting to me that, like, I don't think anybody would go and approach him with that. I think they'd be, like, going to the grocery store.
Well, I guess it was more kind of like, let's blame all our problems on this guy.
Okay, so that's a good reading. I totally didn't think of that, but that makes a lot of sense. Because, like, that's oftentimes
what happens,
right?
He's the only one there, so let's make him scapegoat and, like, ask him all the stuff. Yeah. And then also, like, practically, I'm assuming there were white people who worked at the grocery store who maybe don't, like, see, like, the owners or whatever. We don't know, because it's not, you know, super important to the show. But, like, maybe they are transported off to Canada. Because we do see throughout the show, like, random people are assigned random other jobs by DanCorp that they never had before. Like, the guy who was a package delivery guy was he was great, though. He was like, look at this posture. Like, what was he? Like a hospitality hotel worker guy? And I was like, people are getting, like, kind of shoved into, like, random jobs they've never had experience in before. So, yeah. Sorry, I kind of got off track here. But, I think the first episode is meant to be disorienting in that way,
I guess.
But
my perspective is that I understand all of the jokes that they're trying mm-hmm. to kind of invert by having all of the racial jokes be about him, essentially.
Right.
But to get those jokes told, and I think that's kind of building off of kind of the grocery store point, essentially, people have to act somewhat irrationally or somewhat out of human character to get
they seem caricatured sometimes.
It's like they're right, the writers are maneuvering the characters into position so they can tell their jokes, but it's either done very clumsily or just kind of done not in a genuine
natural kind of way.
So the characters don't feel quite right.
It's hard, because, like, especially when I feel like when you're talking about stuff like race, like, it's very easy to be, like, way too subtle or be, like, too over the top. It's hard to, like, balance that, like, or straddle that line, I guess. So, yeah, I can see that. For instance, like, that weird episode with, like, the Asian woman
bringing... Yep, I was gonna bring that up.
Like, that was, like, way too much. Like, it was really... It was, like, beyond what was, like, I guess... Because, like, I guess I could see people being like that in real life, but it just seemed, like, way too extreme.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, I can't buy this because it's, like, too extreme. That's, like, a situation.
I've seen that scenario before in bad racist romantic comedies from the early 90s. Like, I didn't want to see it retold in this, like,
in
a
reverse.
Very similar
it was really, yeah.
way. Like, ultimately, I had this character who I didn't like doing something mean just to spite other people. Like,
mm-hmm.
How was I supposed to empathize with her position? She just seemed like...
Right. Also, I don't really understand, like, why he went along with it.
Great point.
Yeah.
Why did he go along with it? I mean, was it because he was drunk? I don't get it. It was really weird.
I don't know. I was drunk and sad. My favorite part of that scene, though, was the very end where I can't remember who says it, but she's, I think, maybe the woman's mother who's like, he's still better than the last boyfriend or something. I was like,
dang.
I want to see that. Oof. That's the one I want to see.
Do you want to see? Yeah. I don't know. That the woman who dragged him there seemed like a absolute mess. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, my sense of shoot and fruit, or however you pronounce it, like, only goes so far. Like, that was just, like, painful to watch. Like, I don't know. Like, seeing her inflict her family on him was, like, really, really, really awkward. And I was like,
He did. He did have that interesting line where he was like, "Let me for once do the right thing," and like, so he was going to try to rectify like hundreds of years of racism. And what's interesting is he goes to make that statement and he vomits.
Yeah,
which I think is totally the right. You know, ultimately that's what's going to happen when somebody tries to do that.
But anyway, so what were we talking about when we got cut off?
Well, we were talking about the awkward dinner that Gary had to deal with. I think my favorite part of that was essentially that in his exuberance to apologize, he kept cutting off everyone.
Which is, like,
exactly the point.
A great metaphor for, like, how, yeah.
Because even though he was, like, apologizing, it was still about him, and it was still undone on his terms and not respecting the other people at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty cringy, but also extremely accurate. I'm trying to think, was there anything? I'm just trying to go through my notes chronologically. I like how, like, I think this was in episode one, or at least episode one or two, but they're already calling Gary that guy instead of calling him Gary, which I kind of like how they turned that on its head, like the whole, like, when you other people. Like, so just referring to him as that guy or that white guy. Because, I mean, yeah, POC deal with that, like, all the time. Because, again, like, with white being considered the default, it's generally you're not going to be, like, generally you're not going to call, like, someone, oh, that white guy. I mean, maybe, it depends on context, but, like,
you're going
to call them that guy.
Because then you'll get, like, 10 people turning around.
Right, and then, I guess, statistically. Depending on what area you're in. I guess if you're in Vermont. But, like, you know.
Or you're in my town.
God, yeah. Your town is super white.
It is.
Where are you?
Do you wish to reveal your location,
Alyssa? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I mean, you'd edit that out, right?
I mean, like, it doesn't matter. I'm too lazy to edit it out, so I'll just leave that nugget in there. But, yeah, you live in a pretty white town. I guess it depends on what you think is white. I mean, I always thought my town was pretty white, too. But then, like, if you compare it to, say, like, upstate New York, my town's pretty diverse. But it's always been really weird because, like, I know I had a high school teacher who was from upstate New York. And he was like, your town is so diverse. And I was like, not really. Most people here are, like, Italian, Irish, or Italian, Irish. So, like, I guess it depends on what your definition of diversity is. So,
I mean, it also depends on what you consider diverse, not just numerically, though that is certainly a question. But if it's all minority, that's not exactly diverse either.
Right.
Integration hasn't worked that great, or it hasn't been that successful.
I mean, there should be emphasis on it, but there isn't. But yeah, that's very true. And then also just thinking also, like, I guess in some people's eyes, like, being Irish or being Italian is diverse, you know? So there's also that. I mean, just, like, thinking about my town specifically, like, when that guy was talking about how my town is diverse.
People still fight for that.
Well, yeah, I remember we were talking about stuff.
This is 2016. Like, the fact that you're Irish in America is not revolutionary to me. Are you expecting me to, like, what do you want for that?
You want a medal.
I don't need to correct anything. Well, that's the thing, right? So, like, I believe there's a place for affirmative action, and I think there's a place for understanding oppression. but I don't think that the Irish community in America is in a place right now where it needs to have specific, special understanding.
I mean, that may have been the case 100, 200 years ago, sure.
Right.
But, like, that's not really the case anymore.
No. Because there are easier to identify target groups and more recent target groups.
Yeah.
Right.
It just think that's an odd place to be.
Yeah, I don't. I remember I read the. Yeah, sorry.
I was just going to say that I do come out at this from a bit of an interesting perspective, because the what we call white obviously has changed considerably, right?
Yeah.
These days, as long as you're white passing, you're white. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm Jewish, right? So.
Well, they don't know that.
Yeah,
you know, guys.
That should have been a statement that was not a question.
I don't think you mentioned that on the show.
Okay, yeah, so I'm Jewish. Before. And there's kind of a debate about whether that makes me white or not.
Right.
I look white, and I, you know, my ancestors are from Eastern Europe, and I consider myself white, and anyone looking at me is going to think that I'm white. So I'm white. That's fine. But when you look back, you know, decades ago, there was absolutely discrimination against, you know, the Jewish community.
Let's not pretend that there doesn't, that, well, no, no, that doesn't no, no. exist
but, like,
now.
There was much more overt discrimination. It's like the Jews wouldn't be allowed in country clubs and, you know, things like that. Obviously, there's still a lot of anti-Semitism today, but it was a lot more. It was a lot more overt. Essentially, people didn't have to hide it. These days,
right?
You know, hopefully.
Well, but then after
my point is
the event. I mean, I feel like people got more like, oh, we can be insensitive and show our true colors and
my point is that these days
across the board
being Jewish is essentially being white, and
the
definition of being white has changed. In the past, yes,
right,
you could say that Irish people weren't really considered white. You could say that Russian people weren't really considered white. It's a definition which has essentially been changing on based on political expediency and kind of what people are willing to accept. But these days, you know, I have light skin and I'm white. So it's an interesting question about what makes someone white or not.
Okay, and we're back for the second time because things keep happening and technology keeps failing us. But the show must go on. So I have no idea what we were talking about before.
I was leading up to my final point, which is what I had already stated.
Okay.
But I was.
Can you tell me again?
Clarifying and summarizing essentially that whiteness is up for debate these days. Essentially, being white is just being white passing.
Right.
And that is kind of our current understanding and definition. I feel like it would have been very interesting to kind of get into, well, what makes someone white in this. I mean, obviously, it's a very, very mini series, but, like, is it percentages? So if you have one white parent and one parent who is a person of color, I'm assuming that doesn't make you white. But then,
well, there's the whole one drop rule in America, right? If you're even like a fraction not white, you're automatically not white. But then you did speak about how, like, if you're white passing or like I don't know, Rachel Dolezal or whatever. I can't believe I just said her name. But like, you know, like people get super. I mean, the whole thing, right, is like race is a construct and doesn't make sense. And the more you think about it, the more you realize
I actually disagree with that.
Oh, you don't think race is a construct?
No, I think it manifests itself in and at least the way we look. People look.
Well, I'm not gonna mean yes, ethnicity.
It's like trying to make cloud judgments too, right? Like there's a point where you can't, or where is the alpine zone on a mountain? There's no distinguishing line that you can draw, but there are certainly characteristics that make people different from one another.
But I'm not saying that. I'm yes, yeah. like ethnic backgrounds.
I went to some super liberal schools where people were like, "Yeah, we all look the same." And I'm like, well,
no, that's not at all what I mean. I'm not saying
we don't need to go that far.
I'm not saying ignore ways. No. You misunderstand. I'm not saying like
to deal with things. Not yeah.
I'm not saying like to ignore or erase that we have different like physical or whatever differences. That's not at all what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is like race, like the terms we use are like stupid and problematic because they don't actually like. We just talked about this whole thing about like how, like, what does it mean to be white? Like, what's the actual definition and how that shifts and change? And like, how does it actually apply? You know what I mean? Like, how do I rephrase this so it makes sense? Like, I see you look confused. It's like, I think like ethnicity is like, that makes sense to me. In terms of, like, you can trace that to genetics and things. But as for, like, what race someone is or what they identify as, like, I feel like... like, there's a reason why there's an other box. Because some people don't identify as what your set parameters of, like, I don't know, black, native, white, Asian. I mean, and then also, like, just big umbrellas, right? Like, Asian encompasses a whole bunch of different cultures and ethnicities. Like, so where do you draw the line? Does that make sense? I don't know if I don't know if you're understanding what I'm saying, Melissa. Can you even hear what I'm saying? Because your face is just blank.
Oh, she's freezed. We lost.
Dang it. Again?
Yeah.
Because I thought she was just confused. And then I realized.
I can see why. That's like a pensive face.
And we're back for like the third time. Hopefully this is the last time. Because technology hates us, and let me grab my notebook thing. Okay. So, we were talking about whiteness, and then I think I was going on a little spiel about how race is a construct, and Andy disagrees with me, and that was the whole thing. I don't know, when did I get cut off, Melissa? Because I kept talking, and then because I thought you were just, like, frozen in pensiveness, but then I realized that, you were actually frozen.
It doesn't matter. Just say what you will.
Okay, but I don't know when I left off. Or are you not sure either? Is that what's happening here?
I have
here?
No idea.
Okay, so I think what I was getting at to try to sum it up was, like, I don't know. I think race is a construct because, like, the whole idea of it is stupid and I think makes no sense. Like the whole, like, one drop rule thing, right? Like, okay, so what you have a black parent and a white parent and... for some reason in America, if you have one black parent and one white parent, that means you're black, even though you're only 50% black. So, like, what, like, once you start getting into these weird things, like, oh, like, are you actually, like, why does it make, why is a one drop rule a thing? Like, that doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
like, that's, like, that's why I think race is a construct and stupid, because I can understand talking about how people are, like, certain ethnicities or have ethnic backgrounds or heritage or whatever. That makes sense to me. And then that can be traced back to, like, like, genetics and stuff, I think, to a certain extent. But to say that, oh, you have half of your genes are African, half of your genes are European, suddenly that makes you 100% African, that doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? That's, like, stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's why I think race is a construct and it's, like, a stupid... idea. It's useful for us now because, I mean, we can't ignore race. It's definitely, even though it's a construct, like, it affects everyone in their day-to-day life. So I can't just be like, oh, like, I suddenly declare that race isn't a thing anymore. It will be a thing for a long time to come because of, like, social ramifications or whatever. But I hope that makes sense to you, Andy. I mean, like
the argument that I would put forward is not in support of any sort of construct that defines things arbitrarily in the sense that, oh, okay, so now here's a 50-50 chromosome mix, and, you know, because it's easier for us to legislate a certain power structure, we're going to define a race by these lines. In my experience with biology, I just understand that phenotypes are different and the expression of genes are different in different groups, and to say that people all look the same is not true.
Yeah, I was not ever trying to say that people look the same.
I know, but there's like a hypersensitivity among a lot of liberal people to say like, well, there's no such thing as race, and
that's
race
stupid.
in that sense of
the way they think of it,
the way that
I
you
just,
described that
with.
Is untrue is yeah. totally untrue. I totally get that.
Yeah,
but there's like. There is a desire.
I mean, there's the whole thing that we're all
colorblind or whatever.
No,
and say, like,
I actually,
you know, and we should all just recognize difference and love it and understand it and be thankful for it rather than just
I agree.
Ignore it and say like, oh, well, this is complicated, so we should just ignore it.
I agree. There's actually, I mean, Tumblr is where you find a lot of weird, like crazy, like ultra liberal to like in like ultra liberal and like not and like. As a liberal, I say like that not in a good way. Where again, it gets sometimes people not everyone, but sometimes people get like that. But what I was thinking of, there was a great like little comic strip or whatever that I saw that was talking about that exact problem. And it was like this one character was like, everyone's the same, and we're all like blah blah blah. And then someone else just says, why can't we just respect that everyone's different and that's fine?
Yeah,
that's like so. I think. What you're getting at,
yeah,
which
I
think is
it.
The point. Like, we shouldn't be, like, erasing differences or saying that people all look the same or what, I don't agree with that attitude. And I think colorblindness is stupid and wrong because, again, it's, like, that's just kind of, like, ignoring that there's problems with, like, institutionalized racism and things like that. I think, like, acknowledging that, like, people are different, like, culturally and, like, heritage-wise and, like, all sorts of stuff like that, like, disabilities, abilities, and other things. Like, I think acknowledging differences and just accepting that it's okay that everyone's different is like the way to go. And I do think colorblindness is stupid and also leads to more racism, if anything. Sorry to like kind of talk over you, Melissa, or kind of leave you out. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I can kind of see both sides of this issue. I don't think it's a.
Mm-hmm.
Black or white issue, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Lol.
Pretty much, yeah.
But I think to get back to white flight, I think I think these are all interesting points, and I don't think the show really went in depth enough with any of them. I do understand that it is a comedy show, so it's not going to get all serious, and I don't want it to be too lectury, essentially, because that's not going to be fun, or I'm not going to continue watching. But I think the premise is a really interesting one, and it never fully explored it.
Yeah, so do you think that if they had stuck to, like, one or two main points, it would have been stronger instead of kind of like playing the field?
Yes, I do. I think they basically threw a lot of darts at a dartboard and hoped essentially that one of them would, you know, hit the bullseye.
Land?
Yeah.
Or something? Yeah.
We're mixing metaphors, possibly, but it's...
I feel like we had the same critique for a lot of the shows that we watched, especially like, I don't know, you telling me like this... Like, the dartboard, like, they wanted to do a lot of different things and ended up kind of being mediocre at all of them. Like, we've definitely had this conversation before on the show.
Yeah. I mean...
about many other shows.
I think a lot of shows and movies try to be everything to everyone. And I don't think...
Right.
Great pieces of art, essentially, can do that.
Right. It needs to be more focused.
That's...
Where's the thesis statement?
Yeah, where is the thesis statement? You have to be in the first paragraph, otherwise the whole essay is ruined.
I mean, like, movies kind of, sort of, like, good ones follow that rule, too. Like, maybe not the first statement, but, like, the first 10 minutes, you should know what the main idea is going to be.
Yeah.
Or should have been alluded to at some point. But, yeah. I'm just, like, going through the rest of my notes. I don't have that many more, but, like, kind of...
I'm just
going
to make the case for poetry. You don't always have to. Okay. I'm done.
You didn't even finish your sentence. Wait, what does that even mean? You don't have to... What are you even saying?
Well, like, okay, so, like, I'm... In order for something to be art, you don't have to spell out every...
Oh, yeah. Sure, like, you don't need to, like...
Does that work well, for medium for television or video?
I also hate it when people like drop anvils.
It's like watching Eraserhead. You watch that film and you walk away from it like, oh.
No, yeah, I'm not saying it has to be super in ways. I'm not saying it has to be super like what's the word?
Obvious.
Well, like, I use the word, like, dropping anvils or anvilicious because that's the trope name on TV Tropes, but I don't know if you know what that means, Andy.
I'm guessing it's like, you get the point because it's like an anvil hitting your head.
Yeah, like the whole Wile E. Coyote anvil hitting him on the head. Like, it's super freaking obvious what they're talking about
and what issue
they are alluding to. I'm not saying it has to, like, we also hate that flight, too.
Like, that show?
I guess it was pretty anvilicious, I suppose. I mean, I've seen worse. Into the Badlands. but, yeah, I don't even know what we were talking about.
I mean, okay, so... I
kind of veered a little bit.
I hate poetry. I mean, okay, that's not true. So I used to...
Well, you like Dickinson, right?
I used to hate poetry. And I actually have been spending a lot of time writing poetry in the past few weeks. I don't know what happened. I just got inspired, and I've been writing so many poems. And I think art requires a direction. I think the person creating art should kind of know what they are trying to say by throwing it out into the universe.
I completely agree.
It doesn't necessarily mean that the audience, the recipient of the art, has to all come to the same conclusion. It doesn't mean that it has to be obvious or anything like that. But I think the person creating it should kind of know what they're trying to say. And in this particular case, I understand the premise and I understand the kind of basic idea of what they're getting at, essentially. You know, look, it's so funny when we put a white person in the place of a person of color usually has in media and in our culture. So I definitely understand that aspect of it, but I'm kind of more confused on where was the humor, what was kind of supposed to be funny about it. They did have some good jokes.
Yeah, it was just really sad more than anything.
They did have some good jokes.
But like, I guess that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's kind of really messed up. Which is, it's like hard because like, yeah, like it's funny, but also like, it's also kind of like really messed up. So it's like kind of takes away from the humor if you're like a person who cares about these things. But yeah, I see what you mean. Like it could have, I think they could have gotten more like something funnier, but I feel like that would have been also like more risky and maybe more risk of alienating certain people, you know?
I don't know. It was,
so I mean, I think that may have been the stumbling block there.
Yeah, I understand that. And maybe part of it is that I think maybe the premise would have been suited better in a more serious format. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah. If they like went like super like post-apocalyptic or something with it.
Yeah.
As far as format goes, I was looking more than like the longer 30 minutes. Because we ended up with character types that were, okay. So like we can look at the Asian woman, and we could look at the African Americans who dropped by, or the cleaning people's union who happened to be Mexican American. I mean, there were ways that in order to make the premise work, we had to draw upon very simple, easy, recognizable stereotypes. And of course, part of the critique that the piece is getting across is that these stereotypes are what are fit for television, or there are a lot of different ways you can interpret that.
Yeah.
But, you know, those weren't unique, and I think it's a limitation of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, time. And I think if they had minimized the amount of people in the cast, maybe that could have led to a stronger story. Like if we just focused on like the cleaning union or something, or we just focused on Lyle or something, like it could have made for a stronger story just because we focus on less characters. And yeah, I mean, me and Melissa, we've talked about this in our previous episodes before, like how in TV and film, but more so in film because it's like that 2-hour format, you're gonna rely on stereotypes just because like you're trying to convey a lot of information in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And when you're making a film, you're like, most films, if not all films, rely on stereotypes like that.
Yeah.
Because like otherwise it's just lots of exposition.
Right.
Which you're not gonna do. So you're gonna rely on stereotypes to tell your story in a film because you only have 2 hours to tell your story. And then, but whereas TV, you can, because it's a longer format, you can spend more time with characters, and like maybe they'll start off initially as like stereotypes, but then you kind of learn more about the character, and it ends up, you get, well, if it's a good show, you get more nuance and more, you know, more of their backstory.
I think,
and
it's
more
that
people.
Same issue. I just
so
think
it's
like
a time thing, yeah.
From 2 hours, you go down to a half hour, so it's even more pronounced.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
The interesting thing, too, is like, okay, so we chose a white protagonist. Like, what if that same situation was going to happen and you chose an African-American standpoint from that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I don't know what the white... I didn't, like, read what the writers are like.
Yeah, I think I looked it up beforehand because they were talking about... There were some articles where they were asked about, like, okay, so, like, your decision to make... I guess like the main character in a sense, like the white guy.
Yeah.
I'll try to find them and throw them in the show notes. And then also, I think I'm not 100% on this because again, I've had to close all my tabs, but I think the people making the show, it was one white person and one person of color. And they were collaborating on the show. So I think that also had an impact on it. But I don't remember the names or anything like that, but yeah, I mean, I still appreciate the show for what it was trying to accomplish, you know.
I think it's super progressive. I mean,
yeah, and I also think I really, again, the episode that I thought was probably the best or like concept wise was like the acting one.
Concur.
What I mean, what do you think, Melissa? Well, you said the strongest ones for you were like the last two. Was the acting one the second to last one,
no,
or was that a different?
That
one?
Was number 4, I believe. I did like that episode.
Okay, 4 out of 6.
But I liked the ones that focused on the Dan Corp a little bit more because I felt like they...
There was more there.
Yeah, they,
I think,
they kind of had a
into.
More idea of what they were trying to say, and they could, I think, be a little more... They...
Focused?
I'm not sure if focused is quite the right way, but... When you're talking about race, people have to be kind of delicate, you know? But
right, right.
When you're talking about a evil corporation, it the line there is a slightly different. I will tell you, though, my favorite joke of the whole show was when Gary, you know, he learns that Dan isn't real. And they're talking
yeah.
about other not real people. And they say Rachel Ray is also not real, essentially. I have no idea. Well, I used to watch Rachel Ray all the time on TV when
oh
she was
God.
In 30 Minute Meals. so maybe that just struck a chord with me personally. But she has kind of, you know, this exuberant personality. And, you know, she isn't as everywhere as she used to be. But...
Mm-hmm,
she definitely
true.
Had a time where she felt like she was everywhere and she had her own talk show. And I can see kind of the parallels to the fictional Dan.
To Dan.
Not exactly, obviously, but
right.
she wasn't a random choice. They didn't just pick a celebrity and throw that name
oh,
out
yeah.
there. It was, you know, she kind of was able to get
yeah.
success based
yeah,
on her personality and, you know, how much
yeah.
people liked her. And she went from, you know, doing this random cooking show to being, you know, a well-known talk show host.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, like, when I finished watching the series, I was just kind of, I guess, synthesizing and thinking and trying to figure out, like, because at first it wasn't immediately apparent to me what the whole Dan isn't real thing was referring to. In terms of like what is this referring to in real life, so it took me a while to kind of put it together, but I mean I think it goes back to what Andy was saying earlier about how like the whole concept of selfie man is like ridiculous and untrue because that's not how like real life works. Like people rely like you know, Gary got to where he was because there's like institutional structures or whatever.
Yeah, the GI Bill gave him his house in the suburbs, right? Like,
yeah, etc. And then I was thinking, so like the way I kind of view that, and I think, again, it ties in, was, like, I guess for when a lot of people are, okay, this is my, based on my experience, or my view of things, so I could be completely wrong, but I think there tends to be kind of, like, if you're in a place of privilege, like, say, like, you are white, I feel like it was, like, the whole Dan is not real moment was kind of, like, and again, I've never experienced this, like, really personally, but, like thinking, oh, like, finally realizing, like, oh, white people do have humongous privilege and benefits compared to POC. Like, I feel like it's one of those moments.
Yes.
Where it's kind of like...
I agree.
That's why I was like, that's what I thought that was, like, a parallel to. I mean, not to say that... I mean, I definitely have... I'm definitely privileged as well compared to other people. Like, I mean, let's not be just, like, into, the, like, an oppression Olympics or anything, but, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, like, Asians have it so horrible compared... Like, you know.
Oh, you'd have it a lot worse if you had an accent. I mean, there are things that are, like...
Sure, yeah, you know, there's the qualifiers and stuff,
yeah,
definitely.
That, like, can really change things so drastically, so quickly.
Mm-hmm. And we've already gone into, like, Asian stereotypes in other episodes, so we're not gonna do that here. But, yeah... I mean, this has by far been our most social justice-y episode yet. So, it's been a fun time. Usually our episodes are not this, like, I guess, serious? Because usually we are talking more about, I don't know, how, like, stupid the show is. Or, like, weird stuff going on with the graphics of the story.
I mean,
or how there's gigantic plot holes. But it's so condensed,
fun.
You know?
But, I mean,
yeah.
That's... Yeah. We have a show. It's called Sci-Fi mm-hmm, in Color. Mm-hmm. And,
yep, and there's reason.
And we don't often talk about color.
Yeah, we don't.
That because I mean, and from my perspective, there's a few kind of things here. Again, I am white, so that's my angle. But you know, it's about bringing attention to TV shows and movies, which feature, you know, people of color.
Absolutely.
Actors, writers.
And I like whatever. To, and the reason why I kind of, our usual format is usually less, I guess, social justice-y, I think, is because I kind of like to focus on how it should be normal to see people of color in sci-fi. We shouldn't have to talk about it like it's some weird special thing. Like, there should be POC in sci-fi because, like, the future is probably not going to be blinding white. So, I don't know. That's also another personal reason why I've just... Sorry, say what?
No, I mean, if you obviously
the future
look
won't
at the
be
trends,
blindingly
it
white.
Definitely
yeah,
won't
I mean,
be
again,
white.
We talked about it earlier in the episode. Like, by 2044, projected, well, anyway, it could be earlier or later, but around 2044, the country will be majority-minority, so white people won't be in the minority for the first time in a long time. So,
I mean,
I don't know, I think... I look forward to that day. This should be an interesting time.
I don't think it will be.
Right, cause, like,
because
we're in that tradition.
Sure.
Yeah.
All the institutions are still, unless you, obviously we can't see what is going to happen in the next, you know, what is it, 30 odd years. But obviously we don't even know what's going to happen in the next 4 years. But.
Yeah. Well, this might be that convulsion period. This might be
growing
the last
pains.
Big backlash.
Yeah.
You know, like, could be.
Yeah.
Or it could be just the beginning of a backlash that lasts for another 12 years and things get real weird.
We'll see what happens. I think we'll ultimately we'll be okay. To repeat what I was saying earlier in the episode, it's all going to be okay. I mean, yes, we have to take action and not be complacent and let things, like, just happen, but I think we'll be all right in the long run. Or maybe I'm just being way too optimistic, but yeah.
I think it's better
to
be
get back.
Optimistic and
well, yeah,
helpful.
I think there's things we can do. I don't think we're as helpless as people say we are. But just to break out of the serious moment, the whole thing about corn, that was kind of funny to me. I don't hate corn. I just don't think... I'm just not crazy about corn.
Let me tell you about corn.
I don't know, Melissa.
Let me tell you about corn. I went to...
Are you crazy about corn? I can't remember. I know you're crazy about potatoes,
okay, yeah. Potatoes are the ultimate food. But I went to Chipotle.
The whitest food.
I went to Chipotle today. And they were out of corn. And I was so sad.
Did you have a meltdown?
I did not have a meltdown.
Did you have a meltdown?
But I was so sad. And then I watched this, and I was like,
but
yes.
But they had avocado, so you were okay.
No, I don't pay
extra
for guac. I'm cheap.
Oh, yeah, I go to Moe's for the free guac. Are there even Moe's where you live?
Yes,
no, right?
There's a Moe's, like, 5 minutes from my
house.
Oh,
there are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry. There's a Chipotle close to me and a Moe's, so don't worry. I can get all of the fake Mexican food I want.
I don't think there's any Moe's around Providence.
No.
Are there?
But
if you
come to my hometown, I'll take
there's
you to
Moe's
the Moe's.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, it's like, they're like all the same. Qdoba, Moe's, Chipotle, like, they're all the same.
They're completely different, Maggie.
Yeah,
Moe's
whatever.
Gives you free chips.
Oh, yeah, that's for two. Oh, Lord. Do you hear that car alarm? Okay, sorry, listeners. Oh, it's over now. Okay, let's finish this up. So, yeah, I would laugh at the corn joke because, like, I personally am not crazy about corn. And, I mean, so, consensus, you're crazy about corn, Melissa.
Crazy is a strong word, but I do like corn a lot.
Okay, and then what... I feel like we talked about this briefly because of that. Like, what are your feelings on corn, Andy?
I am
take it, leave it, like
I'm largely ambivalent towards corn.
Okay, so maybe the joke was not the greatest, but I don't know.
As the representative of white males of America,
obviously not. But like, sorry, that clip like looks so bad. Anyway, I know you're not like representative of all white males in America.
Most are taller. But...
Okay, dude. You and your, like, weird shortness insecurity thing. Like, it's gonna be okay. You're gonna be fine.
How do you feel about corn, Maggie?
I already said how I felt about corn. It's fine, but I'm not crazy about it. So, I don't know. I didn't know that was a stereotype for white people, that they were obsessed with corn.
I don't know.
That was
you
new
guys,
to me.
You guys just said that you guys are ambivalent or just, like, okay with corn. So maybe it's, I don't know, maybe they just made that up. Maybe it's a California thing.
Yeah, I was
thing.
Saying
Who
it's
knows?
More California. I don't know if that's...
Those weird Californians.
White people in California love corn.
Apparently.
I guess so.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, I guess my last... I did mention that... I did talk about Seagull a little bit, but it wasn't really much of a hook. And then... let's see. Lastly, I guess one thing I liked, and again, this kind of goes to the DanCorp thing, and how it's like omnipresent, I guess, is like... The whole self-made man thing. I think the last episode when they're having that party where Gary is supposed to be leaving, I'm pretty sure they snuck like some samples of like self-made man like into like the music or something, which I thought was like ridiculous, but also kind of fit the, I guess, environment of the show, of like how DanCorp is everywhere. But yeah, I guess it's like that's probably the more interesting piece, right? Like what's DanCorp all about? Because like. We don't really get too many answers about what that is, right?
Yeah.
But I don't need more answers. We already know.
Right,
we already understand
that's
it
true.
To a
I do.
Degree.
Why the hell did they want to transport everyone to Canada?
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, they talked about... Right. Well, didn't they end up deciding that the reason was the mundane...
It was better for everyone.
The mundane reason of money and marketing? I don't know. I almost thought of it, and this is maybe this is extreme, but I almost thought of it as like kind of trying to connect these things to real world things, like kind of a reversal of the whole Japanese internment thing, which is interesting because of, you know, stuff that's happening recently. But like I thought it was like they can't make money off of white people anymore because of changing demographics. So let's just move them all to this one place.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Where we don't have to worry about them anymore, and we'll just worry about marketing to a more diverse crowd. If you see what I mean, that's the way I read it.
That's not
do
how
you,
I read
you
it
get
at
that?
All.
I didn't get that at all, but that's so clever.
We have to censor you out because we try not to curse on this show.
So flipping that's so flipping clever.
What's that, 263 something? Anyway, sorry, I probably should show you that before. But yeah, like I don't know. Now that I mean, that's the way I read it, and like you seem to think that's like really
I think
messed
that's
up,
really,
but also relevant. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a totally solid read as a like a profit making endeavor. Who would?
Because that's the whole thing, right? Like evil corporation. Yeah. All they care about is making money. So in a weird twist, we no longer care about white people. Let's throw them under the bus or like throw them over in Canada, mm-hmm. where we never have to worry about them ever again.
And then they create a spokesperson that is tailored to the white American. Idea, you know, mythos, right? Like, oh, of course it would be a cowboy that no one relates to or thinks is real, because like that's exactly who they would want to speak to that group. Yeah,
even though when you think about it, like, well, here's the thing, I guess that leads to the more interesting question of like, so why would they stick with Dan when everyone, all the POC seem to believe that he's not real.
Oh, but, they don't but Dan only speaks to the emissary.
Oh, the emissary is the, I see.
The actual rep.
But then also, what's the greater purpose of having emissaries in the first place? Just to still exert that power? Like, what's that all about?
Unless there was a lack of faith in the community's ability to deal without white people.
Oh, yeah, now we're getting really into the social justice-y, like,
yeah, but that seems, I think, yeah, that's too black and white. I don't think that it's might be actually a little that too drastic. Extreme. That's, yeah. That would be fun to argue, but I don't think it's real in the text.
Mm-hmm. So, Melissa, what did you think of the whole, I said I read it as kind of like a weird inversion of, like, Japanese internment. What are you thinking?
I did not read it that way at all. The way I kind of came at it was from, some of my economics classes, and the way that we have kind of talked about essentially diversification of marketing, essentially, where you would get toys, for example, and they'd be like Legos, right? And you can market those to boys and girls, and one product sells decently well, fine. But, you know, in more recent years, the products have become slightly different, in which you're going to get more boy toys and more girl toys. Two products better tailored for their demographics, more money, and you're getting this kind of further stratification of demographics. And I've talked about this maybe before, I can't quite remember. But when they were talking about marketing, that's kind of the angle that I came at it from, essentially, that by separating out people into different groups, you can essentially better tailor a product so it's going to, from the corporation's perspective, it's going to better fit the consumer. Now, this is obviously based on like stereotypes, and it probably
it's super problematic, but yeah, like that's how it serves
us well as consumers necessarily. It doesn't necessarily serve us well that we have, you know, girl toys and boy toys. But you could argue that that's the way that the consumers like it because it's better, you know, quote unquote, suited for our tastes. That's the way that I took it. I think your interpretation is very interesting, though.
Yeah. I feel like it's... I kind of feel like it could be a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's the great thing about film, right? And, like, and video. Like, you can interpret it however you want. And as long as you can kind of back it up, it's, like, valid, right?
Yes.
But yeah. I don't know. I think... I think I lost a thought also. But it's, like, I'm too tired right now. But yeah, I think if I look at my notes, I'll get it back. Let's see. What was I thinking about? Nope, I think it's gone. But yeah, just... Sorry, there's like so much distracting noise in the background. I don't know. It's like someone moving trash cans around or something.
Yeah.
What's happening? I had a closing thought, but I lost it. But I guess like to just wrap things up, like one thing I was thinking about, right, with the whole... in such and such a year, the U.S. will become minority-majority. Like, I remember back in high school, I was talking to one of my science teachers about this, and I think at the time, the projection was 2050 or 2060 or something, and now it's kind of crept up. But I remember talking to her about this, and she was like, oh no, like, I can't believe that it'll never happen. And I'm just like, y'all are in denial. Like, if you just look at basic statistics and birth rates, like, white people won't be the majority for very long. And so I think, I don't know, I don't think people are super, I don't think people are as in denial about that anymore, but it's definitely led to interesting times in our country, especially, like, again, recently.
Yeah. But
yeah,
the power structures are still the same. And so...
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a huge problem, right?
When I...
that's the biggest problem.
They're different than they were 30 years ago. We had an African-American president for the past 8 years.
But then people reacted... Well, not everyone, but, like, some people reacted extremely badly to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that's a reaction, right?
So, and don't say had. Don't make it final, man. We still got, like, 1 month left.
Right, you know, for certain.
We've got 1 month left.
There's a month left of an our first African-American president. Certainly not going to be the last. I mean, but those power structures are shifting. I mean, yeah. I think just as the demographics of the country change, so will the political structure. And what we're seeing now is reactionary, and it is not agency. What, you know, agency is just the natural level. How many white people are there in the world? A hell of a lot less than there are every other race combined, right? Like,
well, again,
globalization is a real force. We have technology. Things are, everyone is intermingling in new ways, and it's,
well, yeah, colonization was a thing. And then, yeah. I mean, I know you gave me that audiobook about, what was it
even Guns, called? Germs, and Steel. Recommend right. it to every one of your audience members.
Yeah, so which is right, like, about...
I didn't read, like, it, but why? I watched the movie, so that counts, right?
Oh. Huh. I didn't know they made a movie.
It was some
out of
documentary.
It's cool.
But...
Okay. But yeah, like, essentially that concept was, like, why did specifically, like, European and, like, Asian cultures, I guess, dominate in the world in terms of, like, colonialism and things like that, right? So, mm-hmm. And again, kind of talking about how somehow we turned that into... white people are better than other races, like, how we went from just merely, oh, they have, like, lots of, like, power in terms of, like, war and stuff, and then now...
Right, well, I mean, like, the yeah. argument was, like, if you're in an environment where you could get access to iron and tin, you're going to have a lot easier time building better weapons than if you're in an environment where you don't have access to those materials.
Yeah.
You know, very basic arguments like, oh, yes, we lived with sheep, so we developed immunity to smallpox. And then if you transport smallpox, you wipe out an entire civilization. Yeah. And so it's super easy to colonize.
It's funny, but how things certain like things never change. Because, like, that's literally, like, the conversation and whole, like, kind of point of my current job is, like, people, the population that we work with, like, they don't have access to resources. That's, like, literally it. Like, and if they did, like, they would be in a much different position, right? So, I don't know. It's interesting. It's also really depressing. But it's, yeah. Yep. Race in America.
Yeah, it's a
fun
thing.
Times. Fun times. But yeah, especially pertinent to this show. So, yeah. I'm sorry. I felt like a really depressing way to end. The show. Yeah, I feel like usually with the show I'm like laughing like 50% of the time, and this was not one of those episodes.
And it's funny. It was on Comedy Central. I think,
I know, right? You think? Yeah. I think part of it too is because I have like I have someone like physically sitting next to me, so like you didn't notice this, but like I know, like I think the way I spoke in this episode is way different from how I usually speak in my other episodes. So it was an interesting experience.
I definitely have an angle that comes towards this from a darker.
Oh yeah, you go on rants about like how much you hate like capitalism stuff all the time. Like, but you didn't actually go into
we're
any
recording,
of those rants.
They're
like,
gonna
just
hear
now.
You.
Well, yeah,
that's all right. I fight them.
You're gonna fight them? Our virtual audience?
No, our audience is lovely.
Oh, the capitalists, right.
The pig dogs that will fight.
Oh, man. So, yeah. But, I mean, I like that this was something different from what we normally watch, you know? It's nice to kind of talk more about social issues from time to time. I know Sensei was pretty, like, loaded with tons of material, but even that was, yeah, like, more, I guess, intense and, like, action-y and stuff. So, yeah. Do we have any idea what we're going to watch next week?
Yeah, what are you watching next week?
No, right? We didn't pick a thing.
I think I have a list
someplace,
which I was...
Yeah, we have a list on... We have a list somewhere on online that we were sending to each other.
Oh, I didn't add it online. I just have it on my computer. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk. We'll decide on what we should watch next week. Yeah, I guess that's Andy, Melissa, do you guys have like any final thoughts that you want to bring up, or are you pretty much like set?
I was impressed with Comedy Central for putting out something that I think was a little bit risky.
Yeah, I can respect that, definitely. Like, again, I said this before, like, this I understand why they put it out online, because this is not something
right,
they would put out on
strength to put it on.
They wouldn't put it on TV, but I appreciate that they like produced it and created it at all. And also, just to briefly touch on this, I did think the production was pretty good as well. Like, the quality, and then, like, you know, just, like the weird little touches, like the holograms and stuff, to make it, to give it that, like, sci-fi feel. Like, I thought that was all well done.
Yeah, I agree. That's all.
What?
There was a scene where he paid with his watch. There were, like, little touches that made it feel like 2482. Like, oh, okay, so he's buying lemonade, but he doesn't need his wallet. He can just use his watch in order to pay for it. That, I thought, you know, like, little bits like that that represent how, in minor ways, technology changes our life. And wait, you know, we may not have robotic arms in 2042, but we certainly won't be paying with cash.
Yeah, I think that would have been, like, really interesting to explore some of, like, the more, like, let's look at 2042. But I guess that wasn't, like, really the scope of what the show was about, so, you know, they skipped it. Also, one last thing I wanted to bring up, because I almost forgot about it, but, you know that random, if we're gonna be calling people random white guys, you remember that random Indian guy who popped up? He's not random at all. I don't know how to pronounce his name because I'm horrible, but, his first name is Harry. Do you remember him, Melissa? Or
I remember
is it
him,
totally,
yes.
Like, right, because he was, like, super, he was, like, what was he even saying? Like, he was, like, a communist or something?
Yeah, he was a unionist.
Yeah, a unionist, slash communist. So, I was looking at his Wikipedia page. I did know about him before I saw him in this show, although I'm not really familiar with his material. I did know that he was, like, a stand-up comedian. And, I think his description of himself as, like, a communist slash unionist was, like, him making fun, was either him pretending he was his dad or him making fun of his dad. Because, let me pull up the thing on, Wikipedia. It looks like, I don't know if this is his father's father or, no, yeah, I think this is his father's father or his mother's father. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. I want to say Ravi is a male name. I knew a kid named Ravi.
Ravi Shankar was also male.
So it says Ravi's father. So I think his grandfather, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but his last name is Chowdhury, had been an Indian freedom fighter, a member of the communist movement, and a member of the Andhra Pradesh State Assembly. And then after years of work, I think his father opened a college in India that reserves 50% of their seats for women. So, like, I just remember looking at his, just, like, kind of skimming and reading Harry's bio on Wikipedia. Like, he came from a very progressive family. So that kind of influenced how, like, you know, him as a person and stuff. And then also, like, he's been on other, like, shows, like, let's see, what does it say? Totally Biased with I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name. Kamau Bell, and that guy has a crazy he had a crazy show on CNN where do you know this guy at
no,
all?
No, I don't.
Do you know him, Melissa?
No.
Because this guy, I know, like, names of stand-up comedians, but I don't really know their material that well. But that guy, I remember he had a show on CNN where the first episode, so he's an African-American stand-up comedian, and his very first episode is he goes and interviews the KKK in person and watches them burn, like, across, and it was so intense
on NPR,
and crazy.
Yeah, I hadn't seen the show. Okay,
but yeah, I didn't watch the full episode, like, the full first episode. I just remember I tuned in for a little bit, and it was just, like, way intense, and, like, I was like, wow, this guy has, like, I think we can avoid censoring this because we said it last episode, but, like, balls of steel to be going into KKK land, interviewing them, and watching them burn across in front of his very eyes. Like, that was some intense, intense ish right there.
I remember a comment he made on the interview
that
I
crazy.
Heard. And he was saying, after he had spoken to all of these KKK members, you know, they'd say, like, oh, well, you're okay, but your people are not okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny because
it's so
as soon as you get an opportunity to meet somebody from your fear group and empathize with them and discuss with them, those boundaries break down so quickly.
Right? Because it's less a question of, like, oh, you're racist. It's more a question of exposure. Once you realize that, like, oh, this individual is a person, then it's, like, a lot harder to just make generalizations or, like, just say, like, oh, like, all black people are this or whatever. Yeah, it was just fascinating. And I think the tagline for that show, I don't know if it's still on, but the tagline for that show was like, or I guess his summary of it was like I find humor in things that I don't understand, was Bell's kind of tagline for that show. Because I think he just went around the country interviewing like social groups that like were very different from his, and just like trying to figure out their worldview and stuff. And yeah, like I don't know. And I think again, that's kind of we got to this point a little bit earlier, but like I think for me personally, I feel like that's really what he was doing was really brave, and I think should be embraced by more people. Like getting out there, like out of your comfort zone, out of your like social circle, and like talking to other people, despite how maybe like I guess like horrible you might think their views are, like just kind of like just straight up talking to them and just getting their perspective, and like that, how I don't know, I just think that's really powerful, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, like, I guess that wasn't really going anywhere, but like
affirm.
Yeah, like because that's, I don't know, it's just to go back to what you were saying about how like there are people out there who would rather just kind of say that we're all the same and like let's be colorblind and blah blah blah, and I think that's, you know, again, me personally, I just think that's, I don't feel like that's the best way to go about things. I think it makes sense to celebrate differences rather than just like mask or ignore. But yeah, man, every time I want to end on a light note, I always end up turning it back to like serious mode every freaking time.
Puppies and yeah. Kittens and rainbows.
Yes. Whew. Can't believe 2016 is almost over.
Thank
some crazy God. Right there. Thank God.
So what episode is this? You guys are on episode...
This is like 30-something. I don't know. Let's check it out. We skipped last week's episode, which I will not apologize for, because I had a very busy weekend last time. But let's see. What episode are we on?
As your audience, what can we look forward to in 2017?
We'll see if we still exist in 2017. I'd like that to be a thing.
But we'll definitely be talking about Sense8, the second season.
Yeah, Sense8's coming back.
Into the Badlands.
Okay.
Into the Badlands coming back. So thank God we were not going to run. I mean, we were never going to run out of TV shows. I think the problem was running out of movies.
I think we should explore more foreign films. Maybe.
Yeah. We should check out, I think, Pumsy was on our list. That's an African film.
Mm-hmm. Got some fun stuff coming up.
Say what again?
We got some fun stuff. Funner than this.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, we gotta pick a TV series though, because we're done with Sense8 for now anyway. I know we're gonna be doing the whenever the Sense8 Christmas special comes out. Is that wait? Hold on. I guess that'll be our next episode, right?
Yeah.
The Sense8 Christmas special.
I sent you the trailer.
Okay.
There's a trailer out.
Yeah. You sent it to me, but I didn't get to watch it. So I've answered the question of what will our next episode be. It'll be the Sense8 Christmas special episode.
It's 2 hours.
And then
hours
we actually
long.
Have to pick an actual. Oh, yeah. So I guess that'll be a quote unquote special movie episode or
so
movie
like
length
a
episode.
6 hour episode of.
No, we've never gone for 6 hours.
And
I think the longest we've gotten has been like 3. So, yeah. But yeah, back to Sense8 earlier than we expected. I know because like we were kind of not sure whether it was going to come back or not, but it is. So back to Sense8.
So that's about it.
And then, well, like I guess maybe Pumsy or some other. We got to pick another show, man. But yeah. So thanks for listening to our very special episode with our guest Andy Doig.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
It was a fun, interesting experience. We got to shake things up after 35 episodes of the same, more or less the same thing over and over again. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we can get any more. I mean, if you have any people that you want to suggest to come on our show, I mean, we'll figure stuff out. I mean, I have big dreams for the show, but I just don't know if I can actually like implement. Like, I would love to have John Boyega on the show as just like Skyping in or calling in, but I don't know how realistic that is. That'd be really fun to do at some point. I said this in like episode one, but like we actually never did set up any kind of way for you to fund us. Not that you guys ever are going to.
Maggie.
I know, I'm so mean.
You're going.
I know, I should cut that out. I should cut that out.
Maggie.
Okay.
The Patreon is coming soon.
shut off, Tyler. So Patreon, if you want to manage that mostly, you can do that. You're, apparently you've sold your soul to the corporate devil and can do money stuff now. So like if you want to do that, you can go ahead. But yeah, I guess I'm rambling, so that means that the show
should have ended
5 minutes ago. So thanks for listening again. You can find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, and Gmail at SF in Color. And we will see you next week. See you later.
Bye-bye.